makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Joshua.
Te washtelo, taya wachianke chante washte na pechu zapielo. Le chante etaha awogalake le unkipiki he washtelo. Ambeto ki le washte kete. Greetings and good day and welcome, my relatives. I shake your hands with a good heart. This is a voice from Earth and it's good for all of us to be here. Today will be a good day. You are listening to First Voices Radio and Teokasin Ghost Tour, sending you greetings and strength in the highlands of the Esopus, what Americans and Dutch call the Catskill Mountains. Regardless, it is the highlands of the Esopus and the lands of the Munsee-speaking Lenape. I'd like to introduce Miriam Yatago, a Quechua Peruvian-born language rights advocate and expert in bilingualism and a sociolinguist. Her work is rooted in the idea of language rights as human rights. In Peru, she worked with Quechua Indigenous Congress women and a congressional assistant in matters of language rights. And Miriam is a former faculty member at New York University, where she worked for 22 years. She published on matters of language policies, indigenous language, territory reclamation efforts, indigenous sovereignty, decolonizations of knowledge and power. Currently, Miriam is a research associate at the linguistic department within Universidad Nacional Mayor de San Marcos in Lima. And she's a founder member of a group of indigenous scholars and activists forwarding the aims of Native American and indigenous sovereignty and resurgence. We're talking with Miriam Yatko about a situation and situations that have lasted for perhaps decades in Peru, even up to the latest where the Peru's former prime minister detained on conspiracy charges was arrested because of a situation that existed during the last president, Pedro Castillo, who again was arrested by Dina Boluarte, who is the current president. And this makes six heads of state in the last 5 years. And we started covering this, the unrest, as people say, lightly in Peru since January and even before that. But there are root causes of the crisis still that need to be addressed, as many people say. You being from Peru and the current crises that's going on there, especially with the indigenous peoples, we need updates and we don't hear anything. As you say, we don't hear much out of Peru news or anything, the unrest happening there. Would you tell us about your thoughts about what's going on, Miriam Yatko?
Sure. First of all, I would like to thank you, Teokasin. I know you for many years and I have admired your work and your tenacity with keep on the good work. Well, as you know, I am not only Peruvian, but my mother was Quechua and a Quechua speaker. My dad is also from an indigenous background, from the coastal Indians. So I really understand very well what is going on in Peru from an indigenous perspective, which is something that is one of the good things that are happening now. I think years and years of being confronted with governments that represent a nation state that has never acknowledged the poor, the underprivileged, and the indigenous of Peru has come to a point that I think of conflict that there is no return. there is no return. And I see that the response now from the indigenous communities, especially from the Aymara community, is really strong. It's really strong. And well, the situation is really a structural problem, no? That is rooted in the fact that when Peru was born as a nation, modern state in 1821, there was never the people that started the nation didn't have any intention of including or reflecting on the inhabitants that were living there before the conquest, no? In 1520 is when we have had our first contact. And it's interesting, I'm going to say this, the first contact was in Cajamarca, which is where the Inca Atahualpa met Pizarro, and he was taken in as a prisoner, and then he was later killed, no? And it's interesting that Professor Pedro Castillo, he's the one that is now incarcerated, who was elected in 2021, he is from Cajamarca. You see, it's very symbolic. It's not a coincidence. You know, we as indigenous are analyzing this, and we believe that now he is incarcerated as Atahualpa was incarcerated. You see, and I think this is happening, let me tell you, this is happening without any guidance or without anyone producing speeches. It's just sort of the, it is as if indigenous people and non-indigenous also in Peru are emerging with this sort of collective memory that is very, very traumatic. And in many ways, that's why the situation now has turned into what it is. As you described very well, in the last 5 years, 6 years, we've had like seven presidents, because we had one lady that was there for like 7 hours as a president. They usually don't count her. But we've had one after the other, after the other. And they are all right now rather incarcerated or fugitive. You know, we had Alejandro Toledo, who is indigenous of ethnicity, but his brain, his mind is not. He was in Los Angeles, so, and he has been brought to Peru now and is in jail also. So ethically speaking, I think the elite of Peru has come to a point in which they just don't care. Provide a lot of these multinational mining companies, oil companies, the permission to simply go and do what they want in the Amazon, in the Andes. And that has been a problem for us for so long, no? Especially because indigenous communities are located in areas where there are a lot of minerals. And that brings me to what is going on right now, because right now, if you look at the places in Peru, Bolivia, and Argentina also, which is now the area of Jujuy and Salta, all of those territories, which are Indian territories, you know, are basically of great interest to the state, to the different states, no, because of the presence of lithium. So we are having, so there are many ways to look at this. One is the confrontation of an elite of Peru, in case of Peru, that is very corrupted, and that it has come to a point of really basically trying to kill all of us. Okay, just because they want to enter without any resistance. Number two, the communities, which are, many of them don't speak Spanish. They are basically Quechua speaker, Aymara speakers. They resist because it's their territory, you know? And they live there, even if the mainstream Peruvians don't want to acknowledge it. There are societies there that have their own rules, their own languages. We are not savages as they look at us, you know? And they don't want to be removed. There are sacred areas, like with the Maya in Yucatan also, no? And the Tren Maya. So there is confrontation. And in the last elections in 2021, there was the emergence of this candidate called Pedro Castillo. Pedro Castillo is really, how can I explain? He's indigenous and he's not. He grew up in a very specific way. Digamos, From the tradition of her family, we believe he probably comes from the Kuye indigenous people, and her parents probably spoke Kuye. But her parents were, I don't think they are anymore. They were what we call modern slaves. They were allowed to live in the landowners, hacienda, in these landowners areas, where they were provided with food and with a place to sleep, and that was all. They didn't have a salary, they did nothing. They just had to be thankful. And when Velasco Alvarado, which is the first president that sort of acknowledges the presence of, creates a law to, for example, officialize Quechua, the language, is first officialized in the 1969-1970. Before that, Quechua was like a howl of animals. So they were sort of freed from being slaves from the landowners. However, they were left, you know, sort of up in the air. And this is the place where Pedro Castillo was born. He had to sacrifice a lot with all of his brothers and sisters. I think they are like six or five. And they worked in the land. He became a teacher. He's what we call a school teacher in rural area. And he's a humble man who's later in his life, he became a union leader. But to the indigenous in the South and in all parts of Peru, he really represented us. It is the first candidate that we believe that in many ways is not related to this elite that are so exquisite that they believe that, you know, they believe that they are doing Peru a favor of being the president, of being in charge. And his election was quite an issue because he won. I mean, he was completely and absolutely, you should see the videos of when he went to the South. And he doesn't speak Quechua, however, he connected so well. And they acknowledge him as because he is one of us. No? It's just a different story. And he was elected with a tremendous amount of vote, but the corruption tried to oust him, to take him out of being recognized as a president. And one of the problems there is that he was part of a political party that gave him the opportunity to be, the person elected to become a president. But he really had a lot of misunderstandings with that political party, because that political party is a very Marxist-based kind of political party. And there were a lot of disagreements, you know, especially because Pedro and his wife belonged to an evangelical church. So you see all of these contradictions going on there. His vice president, the person that accompanied him into the vice as a vice president, was Dina Boluarte. And Dina Boluarte, this is what we would never be able to pardon Dina Boluarte, because she at some point was in some of the meetings, she would always say that if something was done to President Castillo, she would go with him, she would support him, and that is the first thing she didn't do, you know. So this is also something that I want to point out in the history of Peru. There is a lot of treason, there are a lot of traitors that come in and then they explode everything. So that's what's going on right now. Castillo was treated, I was listening to in Quechua to one of the leaders yesterday, and he was saying that we have always lived in a racism that is, I mean, we are treated like animals. And I can write about this forever. I can talk about this because I've been through that, you know. Mm-hmm. And growing up in Lima in a middle class, sort of middle class, for Indian standards, we were middle class. My father had businesses. He was a very good business person. But to be able to look at the way my mother was treated, my grandmother was treated, was something that created such an impact in me as a little girl and growing up that it's been my force to be able to create my my work, you know, my academic and my activist work is delineated by that. So he was impacted by this racism that was one of the most terrible. If you think that we are in 2023 and he was treated like an animal, he was completely disrespected. He was not allowed to speak. Pedro speaks Spanish only. But of course, his Spanish is shaped by the kind of poor education that the Peruvian system provided to him. And he's also a rural person, so they would say he doesn't know how to speak, he doesn't know how to eat, he doesn't know how to walk. I mean, the level of racism was just terrible. And it was noticed by President Manuel López Obrador from Mexico, who has really been an extraordinary support for us now. For one, that a president from another country who also has a lot of indigenous people would acknowledge that we live in a slave kind of situation and that we're treated as less than, you know, I don't know, human beings is something that has made all of us think, and it has provided like a mirror, you know, because sometimes people say things and people are so numb by colonization that they don't want to react. But this time I think it has happened. Now, he was giving a very hard time, and Pedro also made a lot of mistakes, you know. First of all, remember he used to use his
hat?
Hat, yeah. And at some point, I guess he had bad advisors, a lot of treason, including that lady that has just been arrested, huh?
Yeah.
She is doubtly that she was 100% a good person to Pedro. No? So they told him, no, you need to become more Western and you need to take out your hat. And he was going that way, but they're never going to accept it. We are doomed in Peru. So at some point, you know, they made it so difficult. He was accused of many things. He was trying to be impeached. He had three processes of being impeached. And in this one, he decided, well, we don't know what happened, but he tried to create a coup. But of course, the military, it was something that was created for him artificially, but it was because they wanted to detain him. But when he announced, he read a proclaim on TV saying that he was going to close Congress, but the military were not with him. So he was illegally detained, considering that he had protection as a president, and he was incarcerated, and he has been incarcerated since December 7th. And it is December 7th when this happens, that people in the South and in many other areas, but especially the South, let me tell you why. In the South, it's very solidly Quechua and Aymara territory. You know, and that's one of the good things. And I was reading yesterday an article about mapping, creating new maps for having indigenous peoples reflected there, as it should have always been. I think finally in Peru, people are saying, no, we are in Quechua territory. And this is terrible for the nation state, because then we are accused of being anti-nationalistic, that there are all kinds of legal processes now against many of us. So I also had to be very careful. But we began to discuss that maybe we could do some kind of separation. Because we cannot allow, they began to accuse us of being terrorists. There is a word that had been coined in the 1980s when we had this terrible war with Shane Bath, for example, which was not an indigenous organization at all. They were Maoist. You see, some indigenous people went there, but it didn't reflect. Now I think we have really indigenous thinking in the masses, and those are the ones that are leading the protests. So the discussion was that maybe there could be a request to become a confederacy in Peru instead of a one nation. And that the South now is being, as I, when I send you the video, is being understood as Aymara territory and Quechua's, the different Quechua's territory, because there are many diverse Quechua's. Quechua is not one language, but it is a family of languages, you know, and then there are proto languages before that. So it's a long story, but that's not the point here. The situation is that we are now sort of mapping ourselves in our own territories, you know. So that is going to be now, what are we requesting? We are requesting that the present constitution, which was written by the Fujimoris, would be sort of taken away. And then we need a new constitution, number one. And one of our what I've seen is all over, it's not just me saying, is that we need to include the rights of Mother Earth there. And also we are, and you're going to see that happening more. That's why this is the positive part of all of these uprisings, is that we are no longer identifying as Peruvian, but as Tahuantinsuyanos. Tahua means four, suyo means direction. So we come from the land of the four directions. And that is uniting tremendously with Bolivia and the north of Chile, where there are a lot of Aymaras, and also with Jujuy, which is the area where they have lithium, and they are being attacked tremendously. What is going on right now in Jujuy, in Salta, is terrible. Like what happened in, and I send you the videos, no, in January and February in Peru. We have been through some of the most recent massacres of Quechua and Aymara people that I can remember. And so far, legally, we have around 75 death people that were simply executed. They were unofficial executions. And the Corte Latinoamericana de Derechos Humanos, the Human Rights Inter-American Court, has declared that to be real, no? And they are pressing the Peruvian government to find who was the person who did the order to kill in that way, no? And there have been massive funerals in Aymara territory. You see, the Aymara sometimes are not necessarily, mentioned so much in Peru, but the Aymara around are one of the indigenous peoples who are in the millions. Between Bolivia, Peru, north of Chile, and part of Argentina, around 3 million Aymara. It is my idea as a linguist and working with languages that because they kept their territory so well, they have been united with territory and language. I think they have a cohesion that in our case of Quechua that were so invaded, that were so killed and separated, we don't have. So I think the Aymara right now are leading, truly leading what is coming up. And as of July 19th, we in Peru, there is an agreement among indigenous groups and activists that people are coming into Lima to take Lima again. And there is going to be confrontation. And that's when the killings are start, and I hope that doesn't happen, you know. That's more or less where we are.
That's a lot, Miriam. Thank you for that. You talked about treason over the centuries, perhaps from 1821, and now we come to what supposedly is a constitutional president, Pedro Castillo, and described his family life and the racism especially that happened there. And because this most important of all, the question of a political protest movements that's happening there, but also behind it all is the land, as you mentioned, sort of this extractivist agenda by the current president, but also other presidents in the past. You said mining, you know, lithium, oil, any precious metals in that area. So when it comes down to it, it's a foundation of land that the Quechua and Aymara are protecting, is it not?
all they're doing is protecting the land for everyone. In Cajamarca, I should point this out, we have one of the largest gold mines in the world that is controlled by the Fujimori. That's why Cajamarca is always in the middle of so many problems and control, you know. Let me say also something, because this has to do with the dreams and the collective memory. When the days after Castillo was apprehended and his family was also pointed with guns, he has a beautiful daughter who has 8 years old. Her name is Alondra, and they were terrified. Since the government of Mexico has provided them with asylum, you know, Pedro Castillo's wife, Lydia, is in Mexico right now with his two kids. However, in those, you know, moments, it was like a week of desperation with that. We didn't know. They could have killed them easily. People in the Andean areas began to emerge with dreams and with ideas about the fact that he was like Tupac Amaru, that they have apprehended him and they wanted to kill him and dismember him. And it was incredible to me, because there was a lot of pain and a lot of crying. In many of the protests, you could see people crying, because I think we have come up to the point in which we acknowledge who we are, you know, and we are allowing, people are collectively allowing their dreams. I think the pandemic has a lot to do with this, because I think during the pandemic we suffered so much. We were, I don't know if you could look at the videos in my group, Language mm-hmm. Rights, the Shipibo were abandoned. I mean, all of the tribes in the Amazon area were completely abandoned. And it was very strange. They were secluded, but they became infected. So I think the suffering has been so much that we have finally come up to the point as a collective sort of group. Collectively, we have decided that all we have is our dreams and our collective memory to hold on.
Yes.
And this is happening so much. That's why I'm telling you that now we are really thinking. Some people are favoring to become a confederate. For example, that the Aymara territory would become recognized as the Basque or as the Catalan people. Mm-hmm. Why not? Mm-hmm. I mean, they have extractive. They could do different kind of agreements. They have their language. They have their own ways of conducting. We are being looked as if we are savages that don't know how to speak. We don't know how to eat. We don't know how to walk. We don't know. But that is absolutely not true. And the Aymara are confronting that more than the Quechua, I should say that. So yeah. I think this is a moment in which the suffering has brought us to a point in which I think not only, again, the indigenous and the urban indigenous, okay, which is something that I can identify, because I always felt indigenous. I don't care what people tell me. I don't care what the Peruvian nation gave me a script to say, because you grew up in Lima, in this neighborhood, you're not, I never believed that. But that is not common, you know. I just had it in me, I guess, and other people too. So now it's becoming widespread. So the consciousness, this energy is uniting us. And even people who don't feel that they can trace in native roots, they are uniting with us, because the level of injustice just goes to a point in which we cannot allow this, because what is going on, what will happen is that we will all be destroyed. We will all be destroyed, because the country is going to be affected even more by the pollution and by the fact that people are being dislocated from their places. And when you're dislocated into another place, they stop speaking the language. They stop being who they are in many ways. They have to rebuild themselves. And it is terrible to feel like an illegal alien in your own territory.
And that's Miriam Yatko, a Peruvian linguist, Quechua speaker, who will return in the second half of Horse Voices Radio. My name is Teocasin Ghost Horse. Stay with us after this small intermission. Land Rights with Xavier Rudd. And now we return to Miriam Yatago, Quechua Peruvian-born language rights advocate, published on matters of language policies, indigenous languages, territory reclamation efforts, indigenous sovereignty and decolonization of knowledge and power. Let's talk, Miriam Yatago, let's talk about Peru needing a new refoundation, I'd say, and about maybe a new constitution as an indigenous, maybe plurinational constitution that everybody has representation, right? But because the constitution that's currently been hand-picked white men, and I'll say that group of white men hand-picked by the old dictator Fujimori, and so the possibilities for a new constitution, like you can just you described, you know, the details of that, but it seems that people are, of course, consolidating around this new constitution idea. And with new constitution, there comes demands or maybe new policy to go by. Would you describe a little bit about that?
I think many of the ideas that are now being sort of adopted, I mean, sort of embraced, is that the way Peru has been happening as a nation state is a collapsed idea, that we don't really have, that it was is lo que se llama una nación colapsada, that we never really had a nation. You know, we have an elite that is very small, that living a certain part of Lima, because in Lima there are many migrants also, and they have sort of contributed to that city that is like a monster, really. And that we can no longer do that. So there is a large group of people that I include myself in, is that we need to do a rebirth of the nation. You know, we need to create new foundations, and those new foundations have to be inclusive, respecting the laws of Mother Earth, Mother Water, and creating a society that will finally make us look equal to equal, because there is no other way. And also multilingual, because there are a lot of, I mean, we have a tremendous amount of Quechua speakers. Yeah. And I have been part of that, because in 2010, I went back to Peru to work with two Quechua speaking congresswomen, and I moved everything so much that the legislation was approved. So, yeah, that's something I've done, and I feel very that's happy. Great. Unfortunately, the legislation that was approved has been sort of kidnapped by the state, which is what happens, you know? So There are a lot of new things that need to happen so that we would be in control. You know, I told them there is no one can have more right to the language than the elders who speak it. You know, even against all odds. And unfortunately, during the pandemic, many of those elders have passed away. And, you know, that's happened all over indigenous societies around the world, no? Because I've seen what's happened with many of the elders in the Navajo Nation, in the Cherokee Nation, and around, no? So that's one of the things that I feel that people need to sort of look at all of these elements that create a society in a different way. And that different way has to be what our indigenous epistemologies provide to us, you know? Yeah. And it is a deep understanding, and I'm not sure how much, but I think people right now are really sort of being able to understand that there has to be other ways to be, and not just these neoliberal kind of constructions that create Peru as a branding. I don't know if you know that Marca Peru, for example. Marca Peru is a branding. They created of Peru a brand, no? And we have the best food in the world. We have the gastronomic. But who handles that is five or six chefs who are denying and not acknowledging, for example, that if we have 5,000 species of potato, 5,000 types of potato, is not because of the Marca Peru of the Peruvian state. It's because of the traditional Ayus communities in the heartland. And they are the ones who really, if we find someone who has the idea, it's them, not the chefs. Mm-hmm. So it is this mm-hmm. sort of, that drives me crazy. They claim an authorship that they've never had, and they displace the real people who have against, you know, the most terrible racism, discrimination. They have defended the potato and all other products, and they defend the land against some of the most terrible violence, no? That comes from this Western idea of neoliberal patriotism.
Well, for the last thoughts here, we can think about this ancient voice coming from Tupac Amaru, right? And that he said something about blood multiplies by the millions, and therefore
yes.
the ideas that creates the basis for this economical, social, cultural, and political conscious that's now being formed, and that confrontation is exactly the force for this July 19th meeting that you're talking about, this confrontation.
Exactly.
And that system that has to be refounded based on the earth, because as we as indigenous know that, you know, the earth is the source of life, a mother earth,
yes.
Pachamama, as you say. And we are looking towards not the confrontation, but something has to be changed, because this reverberates around the world. But the world is not going to hear about it because those governments are keeping even us, as we are self-censoring.
The media
yeah,
in Peru,
media, but also we are
silent about what is
yeah,
going on.
Mm-hmm. And we also are self-censoring ourselves too, because we are ashamed of speaking out. If we get over that, then it'll all come out. That's what I feel.
Yes, I think so. I think the idea that we should all unite and defend Mother Earth and defend the people, the guardians, the communities who have resisted. Many don't really speak in Spanish purposely. Many are trying to seclude themselves in, you know, in these highlands or in the Amazon areas, far from what is called civilization. Even the not uncontacted tribes, no, the uncontacted tribes are being sieged, and they want to be attacked. You know, this idea of terra nullis, no? That the land has no one in there and they can go and take it. It's still in the mind of a lot of these, of course, of all of these neoliberal, neo-extractivist governments, no? So I think that in the spirit of our father Tupac Amaru and his wife Micaela Bastidas, and also in the spirit of Wiracocha, no, which is our main spirit that take care of us, I am expecting an outcome in which justice will be served.
Wow, I don't know, can't say I look forward to it, but then again, it feels like this is inevitable. This needs to happen anyway, because of the earth, because of the treatment of the indigenous peoples, not only in Peru, but Bolivia, and even in Colombia, as I reported.
Colombia and Argentina.
Especially Argentina, with the killing of the Cosa.
The Coyas.
Right? The Koya people, and that we don't hear anything. And trying to get somebody to translate, I just did, and he talks about the person leading the young person, saying this is outright genocide because they're killing indigenous peoples over the lithium mining. And
absolutely.
here in the United States, it's the same. They're arresting Native people in Nevada because, and then these Native people are not even on site. They're, you know, part of the leadership, I guess, traditional leadership that might inspire other peoples to come. In other words, in the United States, they don't want another Standing Rock. So, but it's a lithium mining, the largest in the United States, as far as people are saying, but now these are all connected. This is why we must always keep North and South, quote unquote, America together.
We should always keep united. That's why I contacted you, because I feel that we have to start kind of a continuum of exchanging what is going on in Peru. And what is going on in Jujuy right now, they are killing them. They are disappearing them, the indigenous people, because their land is in the middle of where the lithium mines are located. Mm-hmm. And there are people who are denouncing that, and we should try to look into that.
Yes. So we look forward to talking again, Miriam Yatko, but it's really just an honor to have your heart and your mind and your energy here on First Voices Radio. And thanks for being a good friend all these years, and the language clarity that you do, you know, bringing the right interpretations from the Quechua and the Aymara, especially the Quechua that you do, and the lingual work that you do. I think that's more needed to really understand what the true word is among indigenous peoples, because often it's codified or standardized to fit either Spanish or English. So, you know, the energy is really lost. And listeners of this program, you know, some do want to understand more, but they only can think from the box of colonialism, especially even Native people. So the possibilities are becoming more and more real, as you say, and that consciousness is here. So, but I want to thank you for bringing all of that, Miriam. Oh, it's just an honor to talk to you.
One of the most beautiful things for me have been able to meet people in the North and to have created friends and, you know, have met and have been in Oklahoma, have visited so many places and learned. That is something that I always talk about with people in the Quechua communities, and I really have it in my heart. So we all need to be together. Thank you so much.
Rise, and over love, no. hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines, you are not cattle, you are men. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Let us use that power.
Distracted.
All right, before we get on out of here, the first cut after the interview with Miriam Yatago, Iron Sky by Paolo Nutini from the album Caustic Love 2014. And the last track was Mind Control by Stephen Marley from the album Mind Control, a reggae number from 2007. Even then, my name is Teokasin Ghost Horse. I want to thank you for joining us here on First Voices Radio. Doksha Ake.
Listening to KVOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at kvoo.fm.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KVOO 90.7 FM. Hoy lunes.